everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up California, your source for all things California in what was once called the Golden State. And I believe I have a solid show for you guys. As we know, what's trending right now in the news is fire aid funds are under scrutiny amid victim aid shortfalls. Translation, the money is not getting to the victims. $100 million raised. Then we're going to move on to California's fast food wage mandate sparks an employment crisis. Translation, 18,000 jobs have been lost since the minimum wage was raised. And some good news, the court strikes down California's ammo background checks. How dumb can you get? Actually, it's not dumb. It was actually quite shrewd as California continues its war on the Second Amendment and taking our guns. This was a run around the Second Amendment. And then we're going to close it out with the Cali Blitz, and that is my form of a lightning round. The Pentagon withdraws Marines from Los Angeles. Gavin Newsom secures nonprofit funds for anti-law enforcement groups. Let me repeat that. Gavin Newsom secures nonprofit funds for anti-law enforcement groups. Translation, he got moolah, cash, for nonprofit entities to use against law enforcement. Think the protests. Think bricks. Think face shields. That's right. True story. And Vallejo Assistant City Manager's X account is exposed for anti-white posts. Translation, racist posts. And that obviously prompted her deletion of it. And we'll close the show out with the whistleblower that claims LA Department of Water and Power, DWP, rejected filling the reservoir temporarily for firefighting over regulation and costs. We could have had hot water in there is what she's saying, and they chose not to do it. But before we begin, and we get to these stories, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. Let's get to our first story. And this is pretty heavy. I did quite a bit of research on this. And I want to give credit to Circling the News, circlingthenews.com. They really laid it out pretty well. I went national outlets, local outlets, video, a lot of information on this, but it's just not a good story. It's not a good look, and it's not that people are guilty. It's the fact that the money is not getting to where people said it would, and that's the actual wildfire victim. So what we're talking about here is over $100 million was raised January 25th for wildfire victims in the Pacific Palisades and Altadena area. The funds were promoted as going directly to those in need. And that was, you know, obviously you had a lot of high public expectations. And again, you know, the elites, look what we're doing for the little guys. These are all rich singers. And Steve Ballmer said, I'll match the funds. And I'm saying that in a good way. It's just they always pump themselves up. Oh, we did this. I remember Live Aid, and they were all disappointed when they found out 70% of all the goods that their money purchased being sent to Africa to feed the children was winding up on the black market because warlords were stealing it, as if we could get the food through the right people without having to go through warlords. But I digress. It's just another example of how these things tend to go massively wrong, as this one has. Again, the funds were promoted as going directly to those in need. Not true. Donations were given to numerous nonprofits. That's where the money went to. Nonprofits, some with tenuous or unclear ties to actual fire recovery, meaning their whole shtick may have been doing videos. But for you wildfire victims, watch this video and we'll tell you the process of what you need to go through. No, these people need money to rebuild, to get rent, to go live somewhere for a while. Not for a video. Man, funnel stamps. I'm just giving you one example. And we'll go through all that. But some of the key concerns, obviously, are allocation fears. As I just mentioned, there are too many bureaucratic layers and too many unrelated causes that were siphoning resources away from the fire victims, i.e. money that should have gone straight to the wildfire victims were going to nonprofits. And I'm going to tell you how they, how 60% of those funds end up staying with the nonprofit, despite what watchdog groups tell you. So the public trust is obviously shaking here. But is it really? This is just the latest in a string of debacles that we hear from nonprofits that are supposed to help from over generations now. I mean, I remember about roughly a generation ago, you know, about 25 years ago, it was the Red Cross and all the big entities. The CEOs earning $600,000 a year, $300,000 with bonuses. I mean, it was just these numbers. Something happened in the 70s and 80s, and it started in the 90s, where being a CEO of a nonprofit, you didn't earn a fair wage. You earned what a CEO of a Walmart or others, well, maybe not quite that much, but you went all of a sudden from doing this out of the kindness of your heart, earning a fair living wage, to making a killing and upping the zip code. Just to give you an example, wherever you live at, that zip code was the equivalent of Bel Air or Beverly Hills or La Jolla or Carlsbad, the high end of Carlsbad. You know, that's where these nonprofit CEOs all of a sudden found themselves living. And can you blame them in a way? They go to all these events. They mix with all these Uber elites, all these famous celebrities who are just earning money they can only dream of. So they want their piece of the pie. And that's how it begins. It's in the mind. It's human nature. But my point is public trust is, was, the point is this happened, has already happened before. You know, so this is just the latest story of nonprofits screwing it up. Mismanaged funds. And I'm being polite by saying mismanaged. I can't say stolen because they're not stolen. Nothing's being done illegally. But it's a grift. The money, 100% of this money, or minimal, at least 80% of this money should be going to the victims, not 35 to 60%. And I'm being kind when I say mismanaged funds risk leaving affected communities struggling to rebuild. So what I want to talk about, obviously, is the allocation fears, the accountability crisis, and some of the prolonged hardships these people are going through. So the rehash is the wildfire summary. Obviously, the fires in Palisades and Eden wildfire scorched over 1,200 acres, over 2,000 homes and businesses lost, over 30 confirmed deaths. It hit the landmarks were hit. The Pasadena Jewish Temple and Center burned. There was a lot of displacement, people being uprooted. That was a heavy impact with 2,000 lost homes in Altadena and Pacific Palisade communities. The demographic breakdown, for some reason, that's become an issue. And I only see an issue with one group. But I'll just give you the numbers. Pacific Palisades is about 24,000. It's more higher income, but there are working class and poor and obviously homeless there in every community. But 81% is white, 6% Asian, 1% black, 8% multiracial. Technically, I would be considered multiracial maybe, even though I don't look it. I need to get one of those DNA tests. I'm like, that's my relative, that's my relative, that's my relative, that's my relative. Everybody's my relative. When I go to Panama, I'm like, man, you don't look like my normal relative. Neither do you. We're mutts, is my point. Okay, so Altadena. So again, the Pacific Palisades, 24,000 is the population, 81% white, 6% Asian, 1% black, 8% multiracial. The Altadena population is about 42,000, 18% black. See, that to me, I found that to be pretty high, only because my thought of blacks in California was much lower. But, I mean, you can have spots that are higher and lower. And I remember somebody telling me, hey, William, Altadena is really a working class area. You know, there's no money there compared to Palisades. And I'm in San Diego, so I don't know. So I took his word for it. And these numbers, 18% black, 46% white, 7.1% Asian, and 13% other races. So white is still the predominant. Then you have Asians, then black, and then 16% multiracial, 13% other races. And I imagine that's where Hispanics come in with the other races and multiracial. So obviously, the Fire Aid concerts happened January 30th, which is what we're talking about. It raised, the venue was in Intuit and in the Kia Forum, so it was big venues. Big name performers, Lady Gaga, Jelly Roll, Katy Perry, or Katy Perry, Olivia Rodrigo, Billie Eilish, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Green Day, Stevie Wonder, Stevie Nicks, Sting, Taylor Goldsmith, of Dawes, never heard of them, and many more. Miles Teller and Samuel L. Jackson hosted it. Miles Teller, he's not a has-been already, but he's one of those guys whose flames was much brighter some years ago. And Samuel L. Jackson, who has managed to extend his fame, he's a grade A actor, so I'm trying. His fame has just been there for well over a generation. They raised over 100 million funds. Some reports cite 101 million. And here was a public promise. This is where they screwed up. Quote, all the money raised will go directly to people who need it now and long-term efforts to build it back. Do not quote me, but I believe that was Samuel. No, not him. So let me repeat. All the money raised will go directly to people who need it now and long-term efforts to build it back. Now, Steve Ballmer put a lot into it. He was seen as one of the producers. And he said Ballmer and his wife, Connie, it's not his wife, Connie, Ballmer. You know, Max, I mean, these elitists, these rich white elitists always sit there and toss the wife in there. I'll toss you a bone, honey. so you don't sit in the shadows. So Ballmer said he was going to match all concert pledges. So if that's true, shouldn't we have 200 million? Let me find out. Hold on. If Ballmer matched all concert pledges, shouldn't it be 200 million from Fire Aid? Maybe they raised 50 million and, I'm trying to see here. The Ringo says 100 million figure includes Ballmer's match. Yeah. So, you know, that probably included Ballmer's match, but it should be 200 million if they did raise 100 million. I don't know. I'm making hay out of nothing here. So, I mean, it's just, as we were talking, it just made me realize, hey, you know what? This light is really bright, isn't it? Okay. Actually, I see what the problem is. There we go. Sorry, my friends. Okay, so the initial promise direct support to victims. Fire Aid later clarified no direct payments to individuals, opting to fund it to vetted nonprofits instead. So what they're saying is, no, we don't give money to people. We give it to nonprofits. We gonna vet, and that's the problem. Is their vetting process seems to be inadequate. So February 2025, 50 million to about 120, went to 120 nonprofits for immediate relief. Then in June, another 25 million for the long-term recovery. And this August, the final 25 million is going to be put out for mitigation, resilience, and rebuilding. So at least 6.5 million went to Los Angeles County, which is a complete waste of money, because that money's gone. Not one damn dime is going to go to that. In fact, Karen Bass just sat there and told illegals, you resist, we'll give you $50,000. So I had to throw it in there. I just read that today. But that said, it was the Annenberg Foundation that is handling all of this. And they advise distribution via Fire Aid's advisory committee and board of trustees. So what they're saying is, hey, our board handled this, including L.A. Clipper executives. You know, so it was the board that did this. And the nonprofit vetting criteria was evaluated on financial strength, board support, and capacity to serve vulnerable groups, elderly, children, foster youth, homeless. Throw that crap out the window. I come from the nonprofit sector. After I left the military, I worked, oh gosh, I want to say 10 years in the nonprofit sector. Maybe not quite 10 years, but close to it. And close to 10 years. And that's not how it works. What happens is, yo, Bob! I got a nonprofit here who I think is a good idea. What's your criteria? I don't know, but Joe's on there. He's my bud, and I trust Joe. Believe it or not, That's how a lot of this stuff happens. And then it gets rubber stamped. Meaning, we trust this board member who's vouching for this guy. That's really how it works. I've seen that happen over and over. There's a lot of trust put into relationships. And that's how life works. So that nonprofit vetting criteria, I would question it. I would seek the paperwork for where's the criteria? Who vetted this nonprofit? Where's the paperwork to show how they were vetted, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there are audits due for transparency. That's in December 2025 after all the money's gone. Now, that said, if the feds get involved, I'll talk about that here shortly, but they'll do their own audits. There's also a Goldman Sachs partnership, and they handled the vetting of recipient organizations based on infrastructure experience and community ties. I got to be honest. Goldman Sachs probably has not one shred of a tie to 99% of these nonprofits outside of people who are in the hierarchy, the VPs are not being on boards of some of them. So I don't know what the big deal is about. Oh, we got Goldman Sachs. They're handling the vetting. And so much for vetting. They gave no fixed percentage required for direct victim aid versus admin costs, as long as funds align with relief goals. So in essence, if a nonprofit said, well, thank you for the $5 million, you do know that 80% of that donation goes to admin costs. They're like, okay. They had no rules of saying no. You can only take 30% for your administrative costs. The rest is going to go to wildfire victims. So none of that was in place. And that's key. Most watchdog groups will lie to you. Not purposely. But when they review some of these nonprofit records, so for example, they say, hey, a healthy nonprofit spends no more than 35% on administration, administrative costs, and fundraising. And they say at least 65% is directed to programs. It's not a law, but it's what they claim is their benchmark. But what they claim, and donors, they say donors expect it. Now, when you do a review, they only do a review of a handful of nonprofits. Nonprofits they probably have relationships with, you know, that's not true. They can go and look at the tax records. So they'll do that. But there's so many nonprofits out there. It's really tough. Now, today's world with technology, things like that, they're going to be able to get a fair assessment of how much is actually spent on admin and fundraising with artificial intelligence databases, the way they're expanding and growing. So that will be able to happen. So I take back what I said. I'm thinking the old days, pencil and paper. So it's much harder now. And that was my world back in the old days. I helped usher in the Alzheimer's Association, the San Diego chapter, into the technological age. So as my world and the nonprofit was ending, the technological world was really starting to make an impact. I got them set up with a web page. I helped bring in a new database system. And I'm not a tech, but I'm a good individual to understand the process of what needs to be done to have a good business. So I was able to bring them up to par. But everything was pencil and paper. So now it is much harder. So the watchdog group says that no more than 35% on admin and fundraising, where 65% is directed to program. Now, FireAid structure did not enforce this. Some recipients hit overheads that would raise red flags. And through legal accounting tactics, this is what I mean by the 60%. A lot of nonprofits classify their salaries as program costs. So technically they can meet watchdog requirements, benchmarks. So 35% is going to admin and fundraising and 65% is directed to programs. What they don't tell you is 30% of that 65% goes to salaries because salaries have been structured to fit under program costs. How do I know this? I lived in the nonprofit world. I never saw it. This is how I was told it worked. When I would ask questions, you know, about nonprofits, just general, over 8 years. I once said I was in the nonprofit world about 8 years. You just kind of innately learn these things. And they talk, you know, this nonprofit, that nonprofit, because you're competing against one another for a donor's dollar. So that's how they get past that watchdog group. So once those reclassifications are applied, the effective overhead creeps towards 60 cents on the dollar, excluding bonuses and benefits on top of that. so the executive director, if he hits his benchmarks, may get more money, which comes out of the donors' pockets. Though, William, you got to spend money to make money. Yes and no. Not in the nonprofit. The nonprofit world is supposed to be different. So industry-wide, larger nonprofits regularly cross $250K for CEO pay. Smaller organizations are around $40,000 to $60,000. You know, so there's quite the disparity. So Pathways LA, their CEO, nearly $300,000. Big time overhead. After the fire, their CEO from 2022, $120,000. They're also a regional recovery organization, so they're light on direct aid. And Pathways LA, significant overhead for child-focused services, not wildfire aid. The IDEPSCA, $112,000 is what their top dog gets. Total wages is about $1.2 million, which is 60% of the revenue. El Nido, $145,000. Additional almost $1 million in salaries. Total revenue over $2 million. You know? So the money they get is going to pay these people to do their jobs. Oh, William, how can you be so not have compassion for others? Yeah, no, I don't. You know, when I was growing up, you got into nonprofit or government work if you wanted to give back because you could make more in the private market. And that's changed. Difference is we, the taxpayers, are paying a lot of these politicians, a lot of these government type works. And the nonprofits, that's your donated money. California Volunteers, $141,000. And it's not a fire aid grantee, but a public funded peer org. So there's numerous fire aid recipients that receive sizable grants. But their public-facing metrics remain spotty, meaning we don't get data. It's not transparent. LA Regional Food Bank was given $1.3 million. Now, they hired drivers and warehouse staff for 30% demand bump, but they had no data on wildfire victim targeting. So the Regional Food Bank is food to everybody. This money was supposed to be going directly to the wildfire victims. How much of it actually went to the wildfire victims? Unless you actually were wildfire victim and were told to go to the regional food bank, you got squat. Did they take this food out directly to places where that was mostly wildfire victims? That we don't know. Inclusive action. We don't know how much they were given. They issued $500 cash grants to outdoor workers. There's no grant count or vetting criteria. Change reaction, $2 million. Rent transport aid to 2,500 recipients. Spot examples only, and they lack the full distribution data that they're not giving us. Team Rubicon, $250,000. They cleared debris and vegetation. No parcel or location breakdown. I would imagine with them, it's probably a little bit more true. It's hard to get over on that one. You know, Pasadena Humane Plus Camp. We don't know how much was given. Provided free vet care, but there's no count of animals treated. You know, Hillsides, unknown. Jewish Family Services were given $250,000, assisted with FEMA bureaucracy. So they assisted with FEMA. They did nothing with that money for the actual wildfire victims. You see what I'm saying? The disconnect here? That money should have been people fill out a form, what they need the money for, a board or some kind of vetting to make sure they are wildfire victims, and that's how you disperse the money. Instead, oh, no. We assist you with FEMA bureaucracy. We maybe process paperwork for them, or we work with them in the field. I don't know, whatever. But you're not really helping the wildfire victims. Music Cares, part of $6.3 million. Support for 3,200 music professionals. Y'all gonna blame tax for the 30 people that pass away at all the funerals? Come on, man. So funding the mission or expanding the margin? So a subset of recipients, the nonprofit, stretches the definition of wildfire relief. Some serve much broader social missions, not related to any type of fire aid. Others operate well outside the fire impacted zone. Translation, you have nonprofits that have nothing to do or no capacity to help fire victims. And then you have those who are outside the area. So examples, Pathways LA, it's a family services. This is the one where the executive director gets nearly $300,000. How they can help directly with fire aid, I don't know. That's unclear. After the fire, advocacy and coaching, not direct aid. Their executive director gets $120,000. So what probably happens, I don't know, I'm just using them as an example, is the money goes there. Come on down, Bob. I'm going to talk to you. You got to be strong to get back on your feet. You know, you got to be strong. I have faith in you, Bob. You can do it. You know, we have all these resources here for you on how to get back on your feet. Bob's like, I need food. I need to have my rent paid. I need to sleep in a room. I can't sleep on the grass in the park anymore. You know, that's what they're looking for. But here's after the fire. I believe in you. So get Tony Robbins down there. So IDEPSCA, that's worker organizing. 60% of the revenue goes to payroll. California Native Vote Project. They returned the funds. They helped Native Americans. There probably weren't many. There's probably not many Native Americans there to get the money. So they returned the funds. Good for them. Anido Visión y Compromiso, homegrown BMAC. It's respectable missions, but minimal nexus to a fire response. You see, this is all shady. Controversies around some of the specific recipients. California Ventures, the state office under Governor Newsom, was under the hot fire, but it was removed from FireAid's website after clarification. So I loathe Newsom. We all loathe him. He's a liar. He's an elitist. But they were trying to throw him under the bus as having a nonprofit that was grifting off this. So it was removed. Got to keep the record straight. Full transparency here. Now, the media coverage. The LA Times wrote an article July 23rd. And they gave, when you read that article, you're like, oh, my God, yes, thank you, Lord. Thank you. Thank you for all these nonprofits. Thank you for all these groups. Oh, my God, LA Times, you should win a Pulitzer Prize for that type of article, right? I'm in tears. It just hit me in the heart. They highlight examples like Change Reactions Aid, Elizabeth Jackson, and Team Rubicon's work. The reporter talked to 100 organizations to review the grants, but no audits. No numbers were given. Well, at all the food donations you made, how many out of that 1,000 you distributed went to actual wildfire victims? All he focused on was what the organizations told him. And do you think these people are going to sit there and say, yeah, Bob, out of those 1,000 food donations we made, 20 got to the wildfire aids. No, we gave out 1,000 food. You see how this is called nuance. You know, in my previous life, when I had a fantasy sports company, we did sports also, we were a news organization. We did journalist type work, and none of us were journalists. We just kind of fell under there in the type of work we did. So we learned how to be journalists. And it's not hard to ask tough questions. I remember being at press conferences. I remember Denny Green, rest in peace, shutting down a press conference at the Combine because he didn't like the question I asked. I remember having an hour to talk to Carson Palmer because the reporters there wanted to go out and drink and party because nobody was going to the Senior Bowl at the time. Now everybody goes. And we had them all to ourselves. So I know what it is to be a journalist. This guy is not a journalist. You know, again, one of the examples here I gave you was a food bank, and that's in my notes here. But there's similar issues with rent assistance and the veterinary care, you know. And it's not that you don't want to help others, but these are people in dire, immediate need. And human nature, you will lie. Yeah, I need it immediately. What do you mean? You're living in one of your four homes. There's just three of them got burned. You got this other one down in San Diego. I need an, you know, people will, it's human nature. No. And to those of you who say, William, you're so callous. No, I am so honest and transparent. We are not good people. We are not born good people. We are taught to be good. All y'all who think little Johnny lives down the street. Back in my day, you could sit there and go to the iPod. They don't make those anymore, but the iPod. And see all the illegally downloaded songs that your kid. It's like, we do whatever we can to get over. That's human nature. Sad but true. And it's up to us to rise above that. Then there's the Black LA Relief and Recovery Fund. They only focus on Black communities, which raise questions of exclusivity. if you're only going to help the 18% blacks, that's kind of racist. There may be somebody in that same Altadena area that needs just as much help. So what, should the other groups not help blacks because you're helping blacks? That's why I don't like I'm Latino. I don't like Latino groups. I don't like the Asian groups. I don't like the black groups. Because that's, in essence, a form of discrimination. Make it a group that helps everybody. It's that simple. And obviously the victims were like, I have not seen, here's one quote. I have not seen any benefit, neither have my neighbors. Individual who lost a home in Pacific Palisades. Then there was another one. Where is the money? Another one. There's a whole boatload. I'm not going to go through these quotes, a lot of quotes. So how did this story blow up? You got to give credit where credit is due. And that goes to editor Sue, appeared on Fox News from Circle. I apologize. Let me get back up here. Get the proper credit. CirclingTheNews.com. CirclingTheNews.com. Yeah. That's how it caught everybody's attention. She appeared on Fox News, first locally, then on Fox News. And on Fox News, it really blew up, describing some of the nonprofits as they, quote, seem ancillary, unquote, to fire relief, meaning they don't have anything to do. They don't know how to help the fire relief victims. So Kevin Kiley, Congressman of California, he's contacted Attorney General Pam Bondi to investigate, saying every penny should go towards helping those who rebuild their lives. That's not true. If you're asking somebody to give up their time and effort, that means they still have to put food on the table. Because I guarantee you, you're not going to see Meghan Markle out there hoofing and puffing, hoofing it out there to help people. She'll show up for a photo op, but she won't show up to help. The people who do help tend to be the working class because they're the ones with compassion. They're the ones who've struggled at times themselves. So 100% can't go towards that. These people have got to get paid. But what the watchdog group said is 35%. Yeah. So far, no word yet if Bondi's going to investigate. She's too busy with Tulsi and Epstein case, I guess. And obviously, President Trump says it's a dump trunk. It's a dumpster fire, this fire aid. Now, Mickey Ferris, who was a Palisades fire victim and former Red Cross employee, he proposed donating the $100 million to the American Red Cross for direct victim aid. And he emphasized a quantified reporting on victims served and the amounts given. 30 years ago, I said, go jump in the lake. I will never give a dime to the Red Cross. But maybe they changed because they got in trouble. It was a big hoopla, and they said they were redoing. So maybe they're on the up and up now. The only one that I know that is the best one out there, Salvation Army. You know, they're the Christmas type people, it seems like. But they give every dime. They're like 90 cents on the dollar goes to the people they help. You know, and there's a few others out there. So if the Red Cross could do that, I'd say they should have done it because $75 million has already been given out to these nonprofits. And trying to get that money back is going to be next to impossible. Not impossible, actually, but next to impossible. If a company, if a nonprofit doesn't want to give it back, they did nothing illegal. Ethics and the legalities are two different issues. Then there's Nolan Apostle, founder of the original Northern California Fire Aid. He suggested narrowing recipients to those directly funding victims, meaning those who are actually helping the fire aid victims should be the only ones receiving money to distribute. And I agree. That should have been enough from the get-go. Period. End of story. Obviously, this has come up because of reactions from the public. Complete betrayal. Never forgive this. Fraud. Here's one that's going to get the performers in action. Calls for boycotts of performers. So obviously, the public frustration is there. And users are amplifying this on social media. They're accusing state leaders of mismanagement and labeling the aid distribution process as bureaucratic theft or scam aid. Now, let me defend the politicians here. This is all private, people. The government had nothing to do with the fire aid. Think about that. Nothing to do with the fire aid. Oh, heck, who was the name of the group? I don't want to open up my notes. Nonprofit that got the fire aid money to distribute. I forget the name. Addenberg Group. I don't want to mispronounce it. Addenberg. Let's see that. Addenberg Group. Annenberg Foundation. They're the ones who should be under the fire here. The Annenberg. You don't sit there and put it on yourself. Oh, I'm going to do this, and then you get lauded and applauded. Oh, Mr. Mrs. Schmuckatelli from the Annenberg Group. Everybody stands up. Oh, and then you screw it up. You need to be held to account. Now, people are saying, we got to be cautious here. There's no direct evidence of theft that's emerged, and none will ever emerge. Nothing illegal. If it's 85% to cover their costs, they get $2 million, and that 85% goes to cover the cost, and they have a track record, and they can prove that. Oh, yes, well, my our executive director gets $300,000 and gets a $200,000 bonus if he hits his marks. With that $2 million, we hit our marks, or he got that big bonus. It's all legal. It's all on the up and up. So you're not going to find any evidence of illegality. Excuse me. My take? I think there should be a federal investigation. I do. I do believe nonprofits need to give that money back with the threat of, well, we're going to bury you with court costs if you don't find a way to give that money back. Why? Because relief dollars must reach actual victims. And we do need to expose these recurring patterns. You know, 30 years ago, it was all the big nonprofits with their CEOs earning massive dollars of money, 60% going, blatantly going 60, 70% or higher. It's like, to give you an example, when you have those bins where you can donate your clothes and all that, it's like 5% if that is what makes it of your clothes to actually go to help the needy. There's a lot of nonprofit scams. So this moment demands broader scrutiny for nonprofit transparency and government oversight. That's what people want because of this nonsense. And that security will drive reform, but government involvement often brings more red tape, more slow processes, not cleaner results. The bottom line is, it's on us. Public vigilance is the only mechanism. It's the only mechanism that's strong enough to force honesty, demand transparency, and keep future relief efforts from falling into the same traps. As I told you people, I try to do a deep search for the facts and information. And I hope you enjoyed that segment. Let's move on. California fast food wage mandate sparks employment crisis. So what do I mean? So California's $20 fast food minimum wage that was enacted because of AB, which means Assembly Bill 1228, took effect April 1st of last year, 2024. So what did that mandate do? Well, it triggered broad job losses, economic disruption across the fast food sector. Businesses are now facing very, very sharp labor cost increases, and it's forcing closures, automation, and layoffs. So other industries are stable, which spotlights the uneven impact and trade-offs of targeted wage hikes. This was targeted towards the fast food industry. Critics are now warning of rising unemployment and weakened business viability. Consequences, they argue, were foreseeable. That's right, they were foreseeable. I had a small business. I know how what happens when you raise that minimum wage. The only reason my company was able to overcome it, well, all our hires were college kids. And because it was one of the coolest jobs to work, working at Fantasy Sports and a sports company, and they could work it from their dorm room. The one thing they didn't like is we did have keyword tracking. Their dorm room, we had to make sure they were actually working. Eventually, we figured out how much they should be producing. But it didn't affect us because when they raised the minimum wage, I couldn't hire as many of them. They just had higher demands. And they didn't bat an eye because they worked on their schedule, meaning they gave us their college classes and their time frames, and we knew, okay, we got them this time frame. Every once in a while, hey, I got a test, I got this, and sure, we'd work it out. So we worked with them, but it hurt our ability to hire more. And that's what's happened here. The fallout raises deeper questions. Why? Questions about policymaking. These questions that must be answered, I know the answer already. It undermines the very workers it's supposed to protect. So I may say we have questions. No, we don't have questions, really. We know these policies will undermine those very workers. Less hours. Some of them will be let go. The automation is going to take their job. Yo, Bob, we can get these automated machines here this year versus 2 years from now when we plan. But it's going to cost a little extra. Well, they just raised the minimum wage. We get those now, we're still coming out cheaper in the head. And that's what's happening. So let's take a look at the legislation and was there favoritism? Let's talk about the economic fallout. Let's talk about the conflicting data and the narrative. Because there is conflicting data. Because a lot of politicians are saying, no, no, you're wrong, William. You're wrong. Really? 18,000 actual jobs being let go and disappearing does not prove I'm wrong. Then there's the political and voter responses. And what are the broader implications? So let's get to it. So AB 1228 raised California's fast food minimum wage. It went up from $16 to $20. Again, April 1st last year. And they also created a council to adjust the wages annually. And these council wages are only adjusted one way. Up. So the law exempted restaurants that bake and sell bread on site. And that benefited Panera, who had ties to Newsom donor Greg Flynn. Just like Glasshouse Farms had ties with the owner to Governor Newsom. You know, where they found trafficked kids at, slave-like work conditions. However, Panera came back later and said, no, we're giving everybody a raise. And Newsom's office denied Panera qualified. So I had to do a lot of research on this. So in understanding the exemption, and I really still don't understand it from the perspective of why it happened. Lawmakers framed the exemption as protecting retail-style bakeries, but there was no clear rationale for why they had that operational model in terms of why it should dodge the wage rules. There was no explanation really given. And that obviously prompts criticism of favoritism. So the Fast Food Council has made limited progress, minimal if any. So by March of 2025, it's hired three staffers, defined meeting protocols, and floated a 3.5% inflation adjustment, meaning going up. No formal votes or rules adopted. So in essence, it's just sucking up our tax dollars, hiring more people. And then they're going to jack up the minimum wage for inflation adjustment? I get it. All they're doing is going to kill more jobs. Then there was the NBER study details, and I did not write down what NBER stands for. What does NBER stand for? Let us see. The NBER, National Bureau of Economic Research. Oh, God, I have it in my notes right below that. Duh, I apologize, people. National Bureau of Economic Research study. That was done September 2023. Through September 2024, that was one study that was done. My date's got to be wrong on that one. Anyway, yeah, my dates have to be wrong. The study was done to determine 18K jobs loss in Cali. Okay, so this was a study that was conducted by Jeffrey Clemens of UC San Diego. Okay. So Olivia Edwards and Jonathan Meir, Texas A&M, they found an 8% wage increase in California's fast food sector relative to other states. Then, this is going to get confusing, but the 2.7% unadjusted decline in California fast food job versus the rest of the U.S., 3.2% adjusted drop accounting for trends and non-minimum wage industries. In layman's summaries, to summarize this in layman terms, rather, California's fast food jobs shrank notably after the wage hike. That's what all that means. Roughly 18,000 jobs vanished, even after adjusting for broader trends. They tried, okay, is this right? Let's add this, add this, add this. It should come out less jobs, and it didn't. Other California sectors track national employment trends, and the national fast food employment rose by only 0.1%, and this implied own wage elasticities. You know, let me skip that. Exemptions include limited service restaurants and airports, stadiums, and meat parks. But what I'm trying to say here, so while most industries stayed steady around the nation, fast food jobs in California dropped, went down. And it showed that when wages go up, employment will take a hit, especially where loopholes and carve-outs muddy the data. Hence the Panera. Hence it was only fast food. Now, this impact is also understated because the law only covers large chains. Cities like L.A. and San Francisco already had high local wages. 28 other states raised their wages, blurring the comparison. So in layman's terms, the study's job loss count only covers big chains and doesn't factor in every restaurant. So the real damage could be deeper, which means even worse than what's being reported. It may be higher than 18,000. Now, full-service restaurants saw smaller job drops, about 2% to 3%. And that's likely due to competition for workers. So, in other words, sit-down restaurants lost jobs, too, because they had to fight for workers against fast food spots with higher pay. See, so by doing this, they kind of screw up the whole free market system. But instead of them forcing the sit-down restaurants to go up in pay, no, fast food places just fired people, put more onus on the current workers, and went to automation. Or they closed those shops. Oh, we got two in the 7 mile sector. We're going to go down to one. So researchers expect ripple effects like rising prices or fewer hires, meaning, well, at $20 an hour, that hamburger is going to cost more. That little chili from Wendy's is going to cost more. That McMuffin's going to cost more. That's going to cost more. We can hire people. But no, that's not how it works. We're still taking a loss, so we still got to make up for it. So we're going to have fewer people hired. That's how it works. Hey, can your friend give me a summer job? School got out. No, sir. Man, so before April 1st of 2024, Pizza Hut laid off 1,200 delivery drivers. Post-implementation, restaurant cut hours, shifts, and staff. So what I'm trying to say is this was, even without the minimum wage hike, it was getting tougher for these fast food joints or delivery services. And what this has done is it's accelerated automation. You have kiosks now. And some stores close because they have thin margins. You get a 25% wage hike and you're barely making a profit. You have no choice but to close shop. The Employment Policies Institute reported non-tip restaurant workers lost 250 hours a year, up to 7 weeks and $4,000 in income. Stanford data showed 10,000 plus fast food jobs lost in June of 2024. July of 2025, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported 37,000 fast food jobs lost since September of 2023. One report showed a 13% fast food price hike in California, nearly double of other states. So what's this mean? It means restaurants slash jobs, they slash hours, and they raise prices. Some, okay, a little bit here. Some, whoop, went way up. Because they're scrambling to survive. Now, Gavin Newsom's office and the leftists out there state that, his deputy communications director, Tara Gallegos, I don't know if he's sleeping with her. Who knows? Disputed the MBER findings. I'm being sarcastic, people. They cited a February 2025 UC Berkeley, the leftist capital of California, that they said that 8 to 9% of wage gains for covered fast food workers. There was no negative employment effects. Faster growth in California fast food establishments than nationally. The menu prices rose only 1.5% on average. And they say, oh, the Hoover Institution did this, so you can't count on them. They tend to be more conservative. You can't argue the numbers. They tend to be very transparent with the numbers. Berkeley does not. They also reference Berkeley. They also reference San Francisco Chronicle, an article countering doom and gloom predictions. That's it, the article. Serious proof, it's not happening. So Newsom's team says the wage hike boosted pay without killing jobs or spiking prices. And they say we're pushing a biased narrative, which is not true. We warned all along that this would happen. Look, policymakers, according to Rachel Gresler, she said, quote, policymakers can set wage laws, but they can't outlaw the consequences, unquote. Meaning the market will determine what happens here, not your law. And then she's warning, LA's got a $30 wage plan that's going to risk more job loss. And the Washington Journal is talking about, hey, Andrew Cuomo and Zohran Mamdani are talking about minimum wage being $20, $30. These are going to become cesspools, these cities. They already are. When there is no risk of the law backing up arresting people for crimes, cities become cesspools. Businesses leave. They also leave when prices go up and are unmanageable. And then you combine that with crime, of theft, then it just becomes unfeasible for them to stick around. So what I'm trying to say is, like in Oakland, In-N-Out Burger closed, not because it wasn't profitable, but because crime was so bad. The extra protection, all this, everything was just raising their costs up, and they're like, this isn't worth the effort, because the margins of their profits were also shrinking. They're like, we can earn more money building it over here. And that's what's going to happen with the city of New York. It's already a crime-ridden, infested cesspool, just like San Francisco has become. The Washington Journal causes magical thinking from these two idiots, and it's divorced from economic reality. So what I'm trying to say in my long-winded way, all this is connected. Higher prices, the cost to do business means these businesses leave. You have lots that have nothing in them. Homeless come in. Gangs come in. Drugs become rampant. Look at MacArthur Park. In LA. And the voters see this. In November 2024, Proposition 32 sought an $18 statewide minimum wage was rejected. Critics say wage hikes sound good politically, but often backfire. That's me, one of the critics. LA's $30 minimum wage plan is going to screw it up even more. So what's the broader economic content? Well, we are a warning sign to other states. We lead the nation in unemployment at 5.4%. Nearly half of the U.S. states and 48 counties have actually enacted wage hikes. They're going to find out the hard way. They should be able to look at us and see the results. But a lot of these are blue states, and they're not. California's job market is struggling. And now the rest of the country is going to adopt some of these similar wage hikes. Talk about fallout. Oof. Look, all of this warrants harsh scrutiny of what I call wage policy decisions. We have a high unemployment rate, and that should flag the economic risk. And these economic risks, it's going to cause a ripple across the country, because the other blue states see what California's doing. Hey, we can do what California's doing. New York City's looking at it. And LA's pushing steeper mandates. It's time for evidence-based reforms, people. We need those to avoid repeat damage elsewhere. What do I mean by evidence-based reforms? Look at the data. Be honest with yourself. Look at the job losses, the closures. And we have to avoid repeating that, but we're not. We tend to be morons. All right. Let's move on to the court strikes down California's ammo background checks. So California's voter-approved ammunition background check law was struck down by the Ninth Circuit as unconstitutional. They cited undue burden on Second Amendment rights, my rights. They're making it next to impossible to buy ammo without going through tens of steps. And every time you buy ammo, it costs you an arm and a leg. Now, the courts echo the Supreme Court's 2022 Bruin decision. The ruling flagged excessive fees, delays, and access barriers, especially if you're poor. Back in the Wild Wild West, crime is not like Hollywood depicts. There was hardly shootings. Why? Well, guy knew that he shot somebody, there'd be 12 guns pointed at him to kill him. So no can do. Don't do that. But when bad guys know the good guys don't have guns, they're going to kill people. It's like they try to give you studies where these mass murders happen. They bring up every excuse in the book, every study as to why it happened. But when you ask the actual person, gun-free zone, gun-free zone, gun-free zone, gun-free zone. You don't need to do a study. You ask the person, gun-free zone. It's not anecdotal. It tends to be the answer every time there's a gun shooting. Judges ruled that California went too far. Its ammo law made exercising gun rights too costly and complicated. So why was the law really passed, and how did we get here? And are we done? Is this victory complete? Well, let's talk about that. So Proposition 63 was passed by California voters in 2016. It was called the Safety for All Act. I call it the Morons Who Hate the Second Amendment and Want Everyone Dead Act. You can't sit there and let illegals roam free, gangs roam free, people who commit crime roam free, and take our guns and no ability to protect us when the Supreme Court ruled it's not the policeman's job to protect us. So in essence, you had to pass a background check every time you bought ammunition. And each check came with a fee. See, they're trying to make it difficult, especially for poor middle-class people. And you could only buy in person from a licensed vendor. No online or out-of-state purchases. And I can tell you one thing. I buy a lot of ammo, or used to. Online. Delays were common if your info didn't match DMV records or state databases. So I'll give you an example. My last name is Del Pilar, two words. Technically, one of my birth certificates, my Panamanian birth certificate, has Del Pilar Dominguez. My dad used to get mail, five pieces of mail with Del Pilar Soto in various ways. I probably would not be able to buy ammo the way computers screw things up. Well, no, sir. You sit there saying your name, Del Pilar, is two words. I got you. Here's one word. Can't sell you. I'm serious. That's what they're hoping to do, to tie you up that way. No way. Yes, they will. That's their whole goal. Buying ammo turned into a bureaucratic maze. Bureaucratic nightmare. Fees, delays, in-person only. Judges said that violates the Second Amendment. Again, the court leaned on the 2022 Bruin decision, which demands gun laws have clear historical precedent. And California's laws did not give us that. So the lawsuit is called Road versus Bonta, which is Bonta, R-A-G. And it was brought by gun rights supporters, Olympic shooter Kim Road, and the California Rifle and Pistol Association. In 2018, they sued. The NRA backed the suit. And the law was passed in 2016 again. Gavin Newsom, then Lieutenant Governor, championed it. Championing this shit. I'm behind this, my friends. We got to control the goods so we can allow the innocent to be murdered. Yeah, I said it because that's what he did. That's what these laws do. They allow the good person who can't have a gun to get murdered by the bad person who has an illegal gun 9 out of 10 times. So in 2020, the federal district court judge issued an injunction against the background checks, but the Ninth Circuit paused the order, saying, nope. It will continue on because we're activists here. However, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its ruling in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. versus Bruin on June 23rd, 2022. Let me repeat that. It was the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. versus Bruin on June 23rd, 2022, expanding gun rights by requiring regulations to conform to historical traditions, i.e. the Second Amendment. So following that decision, the Ninth Circuit remanded the ammunition case to the district court, which the district court had stayed the law. And the district court, once again, ruled against the background checks. And under Bruin, courts must assess if a law constrains the Second Amendment right and matches historical firearm regulation traditions. And in this case, it did not. Thus, the court under the Ninth Circuit ruled it illegal. A recent court ruling, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against California's ammunition background in a 2-1 decision. So I guess it did go up to the 9th Circuit. Justice Sandra Siegel Ikuta, she authored the majority opinion stating, quote, I'm not going to quote that. That's a lot of jargon. And you, well, let me quote you. This is how lawyers, or how the legalese mind thinks and talks. Quote, given the fees and delays associated with California's ammunition background check regime and the wide range of transactions which it applies, we conclude that in all applications, the regime meaningfully constrains California residents' right to keep and bear arms. In other words, this makes it tough for people to get to bear their arms. So we're making it, we're striking it down. Now, get this. So for us to buy the gun, get ammo, we had to swipe a government ID for checks against four databases. They cover criminal histories, mental health, firearm prohibitions, restraining orders, and wanted persons lists. Then we had to pay a fee for access to the State Justice Department's firearms data repository. Now, it's a well-known fact that, say, in Washington, D.C., they purposely jack up the cost to get a gun to keep guns from black law-abiding citizens. It's pretty much an unwritten belief. So going back to this, though. So we had to swipe a government ID to check against the four databases, plus pay a fee. Now, they say this differed by constraining access to ammunition, which prior decisions deemed essential to gun ownership. Meaning, Second Amendment is nothing if you don't have the ammo for your gun. So, now, previous rulings from the Ninth Circuit allowed certain gun-related restrictions. In other words, they said, we are restricting this, but that's only because you have easy access doing it this way or that way. Well, with the ammunition, those other easier ways to get it were gone. So that's another reason they struck it down. Then the state said, well, we're looking at colonial era laws and post-Civil War regulations as historical analogs, meaning old examples that match modern law. The court said, what you talking about, Willis? They said that the court ruled that without a solid historical twin, meaning this from the past matches what you're trying to do here in the present. They say, there's nothing like that. Nope, get out of here with that nonsense. So I get to buy my ammo online again. So do you. And trust me, you get it much cheaper. Which does hurt local Californian to support your local business. But when you're talking about ammo, that stuff gets expensive. So stop voting for these damn Democrats and we can get our gun prices down or ammo down. It also ends the need for background checks every time you buy ammo. Look, you're buying the gun, you got a background check. You've been cleared. You shouldn't have to do it over and over. It's a way for them to slow you down from being able to use your gun to defend yourself. And it's just another way for them to make more money that they're going to abuse and give the illegals versus fixing our potholes. And I'm being facetious here, but it's true. Now, Rob Bonta says he's likely to appeal, maybe to the full Ninth Circuit or Supreme Court. He'll lose. I want him to appeal. He calls this a dangerous loophole. Screw you, Bob. Rob. Essa. Whatever the hell your name is. I'm kidding. It's Rob Bonta. Now, Gavin Newsom, who is, in my eyes, a murderer because he keeps good people from getting guns who end up dying because they can't defend themselves. He says, quote, strong gun laws save lives. No, they don't. They kill lives. Strong gun laws save lives. And today's decision is a slap in the face to the progress California has made in recent years to keep its community safer from gun violence. Unquote. No, you don't. All you're doing is allowing the gangbangers in Latino Compton, Black Compton, in Barrio Logan, the honest, hardworking people, they don't have a gun to protect themselves as the gangbangers come in and kill them. And you know how they kill them? Drive-by shootings, things like that. They kill an innocent person because these morons don't know how to shoot. Gotta look good for the pit. They kill innocent kids. I remember I was a teacher's aide for I forget the elementary school name, but it was a national city. It's here in California. And the girl was tired. I was, oh, yeah, chica, porque está, que pasó, que no dormiste la noche? It's like, hey, you didn't sleep last night? She goes, no, I and talking to me in Spanish, I didn't sleep very well. I go, why? Well, we had to sleep on the floor because somebody was shooting. Yeah. Don't talk to me, Newsom, about strong gun laws save lives. Strong gun laws allow the innocent to get murdered. And that blood is on you. And then he goes on to say, Californians voted to require background checks on ammunition and their voices should matter, unquote. Well, where were you when Prop 187 was passed and gay marriage was struck down by the people, propositions by the people? Where were you defending the people, you ignorant fool? Now, the judge that descended in a 2-1 vote is arguing that the standard is so broad, Bruin, that virtually any regulation on buying ammo or guns will qualify as a constraint, making it nearly impossible to uphold gun laws. Well, the Second Amendment guarantees broad rights with a low bar. That was the founder's intent, you moron. What's this fool's name again? Judge J. Beebe. Judge J. the idiot. He wants to circumvent the Constitution to suit his personal beliefs while undermining the very document that protects us and he's supposed to uphold. This is a major win. Gun control critics besides Newsom say it might raise risks by making ammo easier to get for people who shouldn't have it. No, if you do the background check properly, the people who shouldn't have guns should get it. Now, the illegals who have guns, the people who have illegal guns, bad guys, maybe keep them in jail instead of releasing them as you do or not charging them. You think that would work, you morons? I think so. Look, this decision signals further challenges ahead for California's firearm restrictions, which is good. We want them to be challenged at every step. Courts are finally prioritizing historical precedents over modern-day Gestapo efforts to take our guns. All right, let's wrap this show up with the Cali Blitz. The Pentagon withdraws Marines from Los Angeles following immigration deployment. So the Pentagon, and this is a little bit old, okay, I guess, and it came from the Times of San Diego, one of my favorite outlets. And I'll be honest, they lean left. But I can discern, their opinions drive me nuts. I just want to smack the fools who, the editors and the opinion writers. But overall, pretty good stuff. So the Pentagon announced a withdrawal of the U.S. Marines from L.A. Obviously, as we all remember, they were sent for the riots. So on July 21st, I guess about a week ago, I was sad on this story. They directed about 700 Marines deployed since June 7th to guard federal property. It says, time to go on back home. Remember, it was originally 2,000 California National Guard troops, and that was increased to 4,000 before the reduction. Now, Mayor Karen Bass and State Senator Caroline Mejivar, they said, this is a political stunt targeting immigrants and eroding military trust. No, you morons. It was protecting businesses. See, they don't care. And a lot of these businesses are Latino, Asian, and Black. They're destroyed, and they can't get insurance because they're not going to be insured. Insurance companies are going to go, we're not going to insure that part anymore. Or the insurance is so high they can't afford it and they go out of business. Don't believe me? Look at Baltimore. Look at Minnesota. They don't care, though. Karen Bass doesn't care. She's owned and bought for by donor base that has made her rich. And Senator Caroline Mejivar, she's on her way to that world. They urge redeployment for fire season preparation. Really? Now all of a sudden Karen Bass is concerned about fire. Huh. Cali Blitz number 2. Gavin Newsom secures nonprofit funds for anti-law enforcement groups. Let me repeat. Gavin Newsom secures nonprofit funds for anti-law enforcement groups. Gavin Newsom personally arranged donations from nonprofits to organizations opposing law enforcement and immigration detention. In 2023, he secured $500,000 from the Irvine Foundation for Immigrant Defenders Law Center, which supports defunding the police. In 2025, he obtained over $100,000 from the Stewart Foundation for Immigrant Legal Defense, which seeks to abolish immigration detention. Now, once the anti-ICE riots hit in L.A. this past June, comes out that the IDLC, the Immigration Legal Defense Foundation, launched a bond fund to release detained illegal immigrants. He's like, whoa, you hear me doing that? I'm running for president. So he distanced himself, calling defund police proposals lunacy. Yet he raised money for them. And now all of a sudden he's advocating the elimination of sanctuary policies in lieu of climate programs. man's running for president. But yeah, all this is going to come out when he goes on the campaign trail. Cali Blitz number 3, Vallejo assistant city manager's ex account exposes anti-white post, aka racist post, which prompts her to delete it. And she's African American. Now, Lungo Conley, she was hired this past April as Vallejo's second assistant city manager. She began in July. But her ex account at Nulongo MC1, which was active since July 2024, was deleted July 9th after media inquiries into her racist charge retweets came about, meaning became public. It featured retweets branding white people as evil, accusing white women of upholding skin privilege and birthing bigoted white boys, urging black withdrawal from, quote, anything but blackness, unquote, claiming white LGBTQ members would, quote, sell our rights away to protect their whiteness, unquote. And then she had an original post, distrusting media backed by, quote, wealthy white men, unquote. She should be fired on the spot for racial hatred. Now, she can sit there and say, well, my retweets didn't mean I condone that. Well, then why would she retweet? It's easily defeatable. Has she? I couldn't find out. But an email from Aaron Schlesinger on July 9th alerted the Times Herald. Oh, and I apologize. Times Herald is where I got this. And had screenshots. So former Richmond Mayor Tom Boot called the content bigoted and unfit for a diverse Vallejo. Vallejo is 27% white, 17% black, 30% Hispanic, 27% white, 23% Asian, 17% black. My thought process on this, she was a DEI hire and they need to get rid of her because she's not qualified. Racists are not qualified to hold positions like that in a diverse region like that. Conley Mayor Andrea Sorco had provided no response to inquiries. Cali Blitz number 4, whistleblower claims that LA DWP rejected temporary reservoir fill for firefighting over regulations and costs. What's that called now? I always forget. Department of Water and Power. Yeah, I always forget that. LA Department of Water and Power rejected a temporary reservoir fill. So, a Los Angeles Department of Water, it was right in my notes, Department of Water and Power whistleblower revealed that there were internal discussions on addressing an empty reservoir that hindered firefighting efforts during the Palisades fire in January. Officials suggested filling the Santa Ynez Reservoir without its cover, using disposable firefighting water to sustain operations through fire season, meaning fill it up with water. Just fill it up with water. It won't be used as a reservoir as much as just a basin so we have water in case there's a fire. Now, the official said, no can do. No can do. We got environmental regulations, S.A., and that's high costs associated with sanitizing the reservoir afterwards. We can't fill it. Billions of dollars later in fire destruction. Maybe they should have done it. Why? Helicopters could have easily directly accessed the water. You can't make this stuff up, people. You can't make it up. Wow. And that's the show, my friends. That is the show. Minimum wage hikes, so does compassion, have made things worse. Market value is not set by politicians, my friends, by the demand over hours market, meaning the free market. I thought we covered that pretty well. And thanks to Bruin and the conservative SCOTUS, Californians, we have our two-way rights back, baby. Even if Sacramento doesn't want to admit it. And look, whistleblowers keep exposing the raw LA wildfire mismanagement, Vallejo racism, Newsom funding anti-law enforcement nonprofits. Look, my friends, I hate to say it, but California is not the golden state anymore. What we are, we're a cautionary tale of what happens when there's unchecked power and forgotten principles. So before we go, before I let you go, bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. Oh, make sure you hit the thumbs up. Hit that thumbs up, my friends, and share this podcast. Stay fired up, California. Get involved or watch this state grow too corrupt to save. And the exodus will expand. So until next time, I am William Del Pilar for Fired Up California.